Brenda Brooks wrote a little book called Mysteries. She pointed out that down through the ages, men have been accustomed to call that which to them was unknown, unexplained, or uncomprehended a mystery. In the earlier times, mankind did not understand the activity behind the outer manifestation. For instance, not understanding the nature of the storm, the tornado, or the earthquake, he feared them. The human tendency is to fear what it is we do not understand. Early man tried to appease the god in the storm, praying that he would not be harmed. Mankind resigned himself to living with what he could not understand, and not much thought was given to solving the mystery. Since it was not understood, mankind thought himself to be a victim, wrapping himself in the mystery. But you know, within mankind, there's always been a feeling and a sensing that there is more to life than what appears to be. We look around us and we notice that there seems to be some order in the way things happen. Seasons follow seasons. Tides ebb and flow. The sun rises and the sun sets. We have discovered there is a time to sow and a time to reap. And as we make our observations, we notice a pattern, and we ponder what it is that we have seen in our time of observation. Now, if we stay true to this practice, we find the veils that wrapped us in the mystery being lifted. We have pondered about the outer manifestation, and we have wondered about us, about our purpose. Just what is our place in the scheme of things? Where do we fit in the pattern that we have discovered? Well, you know, in this day and age, much of the outer has been explained away by the advances of science. A study of the arts solves the mystery concerning music with its tone, its pitch, and its melody. The study of color reveals a wider spectrum, one that goes beyond the rainbow. In our lifetime, we have personally witnessed the advancement of many things. We have seen many mysteries fall by the wayside. Now, I think that the biggest mystery that remains is the one concerning us. We are alive, to be sure, but what is it that we are to do with life? Are we to remain wrapped up in its mystery? Now, scientists, in searching for their answers, well, they are assisted by the telescope and the microscope. But mysteries concerning life, well, they're answered in a different way, in an individual way. And each of us will receive the answers according to our desire to know. Our pattern is contained in our nature. Our nature is divine. It is who we are. It is our makeup. And the answers are revealed in us. The medical profession, they may measure the pressure and the circulation of the blood. With their refined instruments, they may look into the body and discover the liver, the heart, the lungs, and the spleen. One thing they will not find is the soul. The instruments used by man will not reveal the purpose or the reason for the spiritual aspect of being. Jesus told us that the kingdom of heaven is in us. However, as my first minister, Dr. Ballard, used to say, no surgeon will ever discover this kingdom in the time of surgery. The aspects of the divine nature are not detected by the instruments that are used by mankind. To solve this mystery of life, we must turn to our nature for its answers. That sensing and that feeling in us, it's really a divine impulse. And this divine impulse urges us to seek the higher for our daily experience. Now, intuitively, mankind looks up. Early man, in his time of fear, he prayed. Prayer is a way of looking up. Now, I don't think that it's so much a matter of solving the mystery of life, but rather that we not consider it to be a mystery in the first place. It is natural for us to live according to our divine nature, and it should not be considered a mystery that we should do so. The divine in us is equipped to give us those answers that we seek. Life is not a mystery to be solved, but rather it is to be revealed. And it is revealed in that secret, sacred place in us. Now, we will not find this secret, sacred place in us with the aid of the telescope or the microscope. However, we can learn from the scientists. We can observe how it is that they come to their conclusions. We can notice how it is that they go about their work. First of all, they place themselves in an environment that is compatible with their science, one that's going to allow them to accomplish what it is they want to do. They enter their laboratory. Now, they know that their answers will not come through their ability to see with the human eye. So they turn to those instruments that will assist them in their search. They turn to their microscopes and their telescopes. And then they allow those instruments to reveal what lies beyond the ability of the human to detect. Now, to consider that secret, sacred realm of life, we must place us in an environment that is going to be compatible with that life, the place that will allow us to do our work. This place is called the spiritual path, and that is where we need to find us. Now, the spiritual path, it's that necessary environment that will allow us to satisfy our desire, the desire to know and to follow the divine impulse in us. We have been told that our nature is divine, that we are spiritual beings. But just what do we know about spirit, and what is our divinity? Well, we know that spirit can only be received through discernment. Just like the scientist, we know this understanding will not come through our ability to see with the human eye. So we go in search of those aids that will assist us in our work, the ones that will reveal to us what lies beyond the ability of the human to detect. First of all, we know the need to go beyond the five senses for our answers. But it is also necessary to go beyond the mental thought. And you know, this is really very difficult for us to do, to get beyond the reasoning thought, even when we turn within for revelation. We take what has been revealed, and then we think about it. And in our thinking about it, we put our personal spin on it. We shape it and we mold it according to our own ideas, our concepts, and our opinions. And in no time, we have lost the purity of the revelation. It has become tainted by our own personal wishes, desires, and understanding. Sometimes the scientists fall into this very trap. They take the data that the instruments reveal, and then they think about it with the limitations of their human thought. They remember what they had previously considered to be true, and they begin to argue and debate within themselves, trying to fit this new information into their old understanding. But you see, this will not work. The instruments reveal what goes beyond what they had previously considered to be true. So the truly devoted scientist at this time drops all those ideas that he previously had accepted and goes in the direction of the new data. Now, when we find ourselves on the spiritual path, we too must release our old understanding that we previously held about us, about God, and about life. The secret sacred place is in us, and we must learn to be receptive to its message. Now, one of the aids that we may consider in understanding the mystery of life is the Bible. We read with great interest that passage in the Bible that says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Well, we know that the Almighty refers to God, and so we reason. To abide under the shadow of God sounds like a wonderful place to be. The Bible goes on to tell us why this is a good idea. It tells us that the evils of the world will not come nigh the one who dwells in this place. This is a very good reason. Who would not want to be free of the evils of the world? Then it goes on to say, 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand. But it shall not come nigh thee. Regardless of what is happening around you, if you abide in this place, you will not be touched. It continues on. Neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. Now, I don't know that we use that word plague so much anymore, but we all know what it is, and we don't want it. Then we are given the comforting words. He shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot upon a stone. I think that all of us would like to be ministered to in this way. And then it goes on with the promises. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him with long life. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. This message in the book of Psalms is given to the one who was on the spiritual path. It is spiritually discerned. It is for the one who is willing to give up his old way of thinking. The divine impulse in us is receptive to this message, and it urges us to heed its call. We want to be rid of the evils of the world, so we agree that the sacred life is the one that we want to live. No mystery here. This is the life for us. But let us remember one thing. These promises are true, but only for the one who dwells in the secret place of the Most High. The passage in Psalms also tells us, I will set him on high because he hath known my name. Now, I've said it before that the spiritual path is not the place for the faint of heart. It is the receptive heart that knows God's name. I think we can all probably agree that this is true, but just how do we develop the receptive heart? And what must we do to enter this place? Well, clearly, there's work to be done, and we have a part to play. Now, we really aren't so sure how to proceed to the secret place, and so at first, well, it appears to be a bit of a mystery. Yes, there is work to be done, but it gets done in us. There are certain attitudes that assist us in preparing to enter the secret place. Now remember, this place is called secret for a reason. It's called secret because it is not comprehended by mankind. The human nature will not be able to detect its presence. So let's talk about those attitudes that assist us. They are the ones of surrender. I of myself can do nothing. Not my will, but thine be done. The beautiful Beatitude tells us, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Once again, we're talking about the heart, the core of us, the essence of us, the receptive attitude. It must be pure, not diluted by our personal thoughts with the ability to reason, our opinions or our ideas, desires, or wants. We cannot mix the confused state of humanhood with the pure heart. Can't be done. These are really two different states of consciousness, and the one is not able to know of the other. Truly, the devoted individual, the one who is on the spiritual path, must have no other gods. Now, to live in this place is to live in the consciousness of God, not in the awareness of the five senses or the personal thoughts or ideas, but in the consciousness of God. It means that in all our ways we are to acknowledge Him. For you see, on the path, that is the only way that He can direct it. If we are on the spiritual path and we find us looking over here or out there, we are not yet fully devoted to our work. And it won't be long until we find us falling off the path. If we find us returning to that confused state, it means that we are not yet able to abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Now I'm reminded again about the scientist who receives the evidence presented by the refined instruments, the ones that go beyond what he can see. Now, even though he has been presented with the new information, and yes, he does believe that it is so, he can't help himself. He finds himself returning to the old data. Because you see, the old data worked for him for a while. At one time, it was the accepted answer. And it was based on the information that was available at that time. So once again, he debates, he argues within himself. He busies himself with his work, looking at the new data, wanting more proof that it is so. Well, you know, there is the story about not being able to put new wine into old wine bottles. Clearly, we cannot live at the same time in both the world and the secret place of the Most High. Living in the world worked for us for a period of time. It was what we knew. Now, it didn't always bring us the experience that we wanted. But it was familiar, and we accepted it to be the way of life. Then we discovered the spiritual path, and we learned of that place where the evils of the world do not come nigh us. We wanted to go there, but we needed proof, proof that it really did exist. Now, the secret place of the Most High is not an actual location, but rather it is a state of consciousness. It is the divine impulse in us that urges us to look in an inward way. It leads us to that place of meditation where we offer our personal act of surrender. Not my will, but thine be done. It is there that we receive the promises made to the one who abides in the secret place. The receptive heart receives what humanhood is not able to detect. Living in the world or living in the secret place, each requires a particular state of awareness. Emma Curtis Hopkins, Copeland State the Way of Upward Glancing, and the other state the way of Downward Glancing. And we always behold the result of our glancing. Truly, our laboratory where we do our work is individual consciousness, and it is from this place that we do our glancing. I know that all of us have felt the result of our downward glancing. But I also know that in our time of meditation, we have felt the result of upward glancing. Now, I dare say that all of us, most of us, are not able yet to stay in the secret place. We visit, but we find us going back and forth, debating and arguing within ourselves, seeking more proof that this place really does exist. Still, once we have glimpsed it even for a moment, this holy place, we know we have touched a special awareness, and we cannot fully return to where we were before the experience. So this morning, let us determine to stay on the path. The divine in us does not leave us, and when we heed its call, God directs our path. This morning we have the opportunity to turn within and abide in this secret place of the Most High. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? As we prepare to leave the sanctuary this morning, let us pause a moment and enter that place of silence where the soul communes with God. There are no thoughts in this place of silence. God's presence is sensed and felt in an inward way. There are no words to use, no desire to do anything at all. Just be quiet and feel his presence. The world stands still. There is no time or space in God's kingdom. There are no distractions, nothing to disturb the soul at rest. To rest in God is to be the empty vessel. God fills and satisfies. His love is felt. His comfort is given. There is no place where God is not. We do not leave God in church. We do not leave him in the sanctuary. We carry him with us in consciousness. Throughout this coming week, let us remember to go often to that secret place, feel his love, and receive his comfort. It is freely given. Let us claim it. We are his child, in whom he is well pleased. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May you turn within and acknowledge his presence, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen.